and serious look at the week's news. Then at 1:10, it's Any Questions with Jonathan Dimbleby.
In Any Questions today, Sir Mingus Campbell, Diane Abbott, Ed Vasey for the Conservatives and Lord Turner of pensions fame, and debating Guantanamo Bay, what should the British government do? The glorification of terror, what does glorification mean? The conflict between the chief rabbi, Sir Jonathan Sacks, and the Archbishop of Canterbury over the Synod's decision to consider disinvesting from an American company which makes tractors that are used to bulldoze dwellings in the occupied territories of the West Bank. And pensions, of course, plus kissing and school plays. Can the latter flourish without the former? That's Any Questions, followed by Any Answers, all starting straight after the 1 o'clock news.
And you can put your views for Any Answers by calling now on 08700 100 444. That's 08700 100 444. Now, I hope you've been keeping up with the week's news, because it's time for the news quiz.
We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a question in the quiz section of Metro newspaper, read by Peter Donaldson.
Who am I? A footballer. I signed for Lazio in 1992. I've played for the Premiership clubs Newcastle United, Tottenham Hotspur, Everton and Middlesbrough. My nickname is Gazza.
Thanks to Dominique Shanahan for sending that in. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome, first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Phil Jupitus. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Fred McCauley. Jeremy, who won't be glorying in their terror bill's success?
Ah, Her Majesty's government have brought in various preposterous laws with the support of the overwhelming majority of Labour backbenchers. And they condemn George Galloway for crawling round on all fours purring like a pussycat. and this one is the law against glorifying terrorism. And it's the only thing you're not allowed to glorify. You can glorify armed robbery, theft, larceny, murder, but you can't glorify terrorism. They say it's a very narrow definition of glorifying terrorism, and in fact it's so narrow that it's already covered by the law on incitement. And I'm feeling quite sorry for incitement, because it must be feeling a bit usurped at the moment as an offence, you know. It's a bit like me when I see young comedians getting their own shows on the television. Excuse me, I have been doing this for 22 years, because incitement did for Abu Hamza, and it's thinking, I've done my work, I've done my job, and then suddenly some new swanky law comes in, straight from Cambridge, all very pleased with itself.
But how did they hit on glorification? I mean, We have a culture that was Mandelson and Campbell, and the purpose of which was to distort language beyond any Orwellian recognition.
It does sound a little like, to glorify terrorism, you would have to write a fabulous West End musical about it.
Al-Qaeda's coming, and they're coming today. Hooray! Turn three, turn, turn, kick two, bomb turn!
The government's won its way with the Commons over a proposed glorification of terrorism law, but now faces a battle with the House of Lords. Tories, Lib Dems and the Lords claim the meaning of the new law is unclear. To remedy the situation, the government has promised it will be read out next time by someone other than John Prescott. Phil, whose freedom of choice has gone up in smoke?
This smoking bill, which got elected by a massive majority, means that people have to smoke outdoors now, and I'm very happy for all those beagles in the labs that are made to smoke fags all day. They said, we've got to be outside now, so there'd be like free range smoking beagles running around fields with silk cuts going, it's very bad for me, it's very tough. And I want there to be a demo. I want the smokers out on the streets. It's, what do we want? When do we want it? A big long queue of them, and you've got the smokers with the fags, and you've got the crack smokers, and you've got the pipe smokers all in their tweeds. Right at the back, people that have misunderstood it, four Scottish herring smokers. Oh. Stopping me from smoking indoors. Well, I really don't want to come in. There's probably a law by now against the glorification of smoking. You're going to miss that cough, Phil. I mean, nobody's going to die, and the streets will fill with 90-year-old people who are just carrying on. The only possible consolation of cigarettes is to stop people having Alzheimer's.
and you will now have millions and millions of very old people with wonderful lungs and no brains wandering the streets waiting to die, but still working because there are no pensions, because no tax was raised from tobacco to manufacture the money for the pensions in the first place.
I mean, the reason I don't smoke, a lot of people say, why don't you smoke? It's my nan used to. And it kind of puts you off when someone with yellow fingers and no teeth asks you to get 20 senior service.
Because where's your senior service? I'll give you a kiss when you get back.
Do you think, Alan, that chewing gum packets should have a warning that says, warning, not smoking can give you Alzheimer's?
The problem is, Fred, there will be an enormous expansion in the sale of chewing gum, and all these terribly old people will be stuck to the pavement up and down the country, not knowing where they are.
Well, you can get memory patches now.
And what are people going to do after sex now? It's one of the great kind of clichés that after sex you light up a fag. I mean, what are you going to do now? Juggle. Just get out the...
In that exciting Humphrey Bogart moment where he lights up both fags, he's going to have two bits of gum on the go. Take one. Take one out and give it to Lauren McCall.
I'd love the scene in a great film. They're there in bed together and they've just had sex and they roll over back on the pillow and then he leans across and he goes, cheese board.
I think you're still allowed to smoke if it's your own bedroom. It's only if it's your place of work. And that would be horrendous, wouldn't it? If you said cigarette and she went, well, actually, no, this is my place of work. That'll be £50.
The government's exempted prisons and nursing homes. I thought that must be a sop to the Tories, because most Tories are either in prison or in a nursing home.
Smoking will be banned in all pubs, clubs and workplaces from 2007 after a historic vote in the Commons on Tuesday. Smoking may also yet be banned at outdoor locations where there's no chance of a passing breeze, such as any railway platform served by Virgin Trains. 2 points to fill. Fred, what's slowly dropping off by degrees?
Before I answer this, can I just go back to what Peter said at the start about who am I? It was Paul Gascoigne. it's university degrees because, and this is England and Wales. Maybe it's just England. I don't know. I don't know how many universities there are in Wales. There's at least one. I was once in a taxi driver, a taxi driver's place of work.
I had that Fred McCauley in the back the other day.
Did you leave a tip?
Not going south this time of night.
It's kids in England are applying, I think, for vocational courses, which is of great concern because the number of students that are applying to do the classics is dropping. It's down about 12%, which is a huge worry that Latin might die off as a language.
The number of people applying to university has fallen for the first time in 8 years because of the impending rise in tuition fees. Tony Blair's plan to introduce top-up fees met strong resistance from cabinet ministers, many of whom had been very poor as students, but at the same time very well off financially. Alan, listen to this. The Who singing Who Are You? Or Who Are You?
Is it Paul Gascoigne?
Alan, who survived their latest identity crisis this week?
I think there's been another ID card crisis. This is not about chip and pin.
No.
Is it? It's about the identity card that is now going to go through. And if you can't remember your PIN number on your ID card, you'll be shot. it's an ongoing thing. We've had about 40 questions on this on the news quiz already. The backbench has caved in on this, as on everything else. And,
yep.
Brune made a big thing of supporting this as in his bid for dual leadership. And he said, this is marvellous, this ID card thing, because it will tackle the problems of terrorism and identity fraud. I thought, you've lumped together two things of rather disparate importance there. The provenance of those two offences, I just don't think they're really comparable. It's like saying, at last, a drafted scooter that tackles paedophilia.
This week, the government successfully overturned an attempt by the House of Lords to make identity cards voluntary rather than compulsory. Tony Blair missed the crucial vote on ID cards because his plane developed a technical fault during takeoff. As it accelerated down the runway, one of the British-made engines failed at 90 miles an hour. I didn't know the Austin Maestro could fly. 2 points for someone there, and at the end of round one, everybody has 4 points. And we start round two with a cutting from the sports pages of the Daily Telegraph.
A urine test for EPO was developed in 2001, and these samples were tested retrospectively in 2004, with the alleged results leaking out this week.
Thanks to Malcolm McGee of Stratford-on-Avon for that. Jeremy, why are customers feeling the chip and pinch?
Is the clue in the question? This is chip and pin, which sounds like some terrible French clown act. There probably will be a double. There probably is somewhere in the country in Blackpool supporting Joe Pasquale. There's probably Tommy Chip and Frankie Pin doing their... You know that thing about people with names like that, like Cannon and Ball? If they broke up, then Tommy Cannon would be... He'd have to find somebody called Kenny Fodder or something. Anyway, those cards that you put in, they're good, them, because you get cash back, free money. But it's, yeah, you put your thing in the thing, and most people choose a really stupid number that's easy to remember, like 1234 or something like that. And women are particularly guilty of this sort of thing. Not to sneer at women. Women can multitask. Yes, you can drive while balancing shopping on the roof of the car. You do tend to dymo-tape your PIN number to your card and put a little tag on your keys saying, if lost, please return to, and the address.
I rather cherish the advice that some government prat gave, that if you weren't able to remember your PIN, you should carry cash. Now, that tranche of the country, the sort of people who can't remember their PIN and need to carry cash... a very vulnerable lot. There are people in their 90s dropping fivers. It is a mugger's charter.
The technical term for not being able to remember the numbers is arithmophobia. People that have a fear of numbers and can't remember four numbers. Presumably their PIN number, they can't remember, not just any numbers. I mean, that'd be serious arithmophobia.
Yeah, but you have lots of four numbers. I mean, you must surely have stood in front of a cash point, tapped in the four numbers and your briefcase opened. But
you... No, you change it all to the one.
Oh, yeah, terrific. And then someone gets you by the throat in Regent's Park, you tell him the number, and the rest of your life ends. You can't have it all on one number.
I do, yeah, and it's easy to remember.
Show us your tattoo.
No. The trick, Alan, is to visualise something that reminds... My number is 4632, and I'll tell you, I just think of Jordan and Kate Moss.
I can remember my PIN number. I just can't remember what I went to the cash machine for.
From this week, people with chip and PIN cards will no longer be able to verify a purchase just by signing a receipt. Instead, shoppers will have to key in their personal identification number. Some people will struggle to enter their PIN number, but at least Abu Hamza doesn't have that to worry about for a few years. 2 points to Jeremy. Phil, why is Washington rolling out the blue carpet?
Some Tories have decided to go and be pally with the Republicans. And it's, you know, bald Tories to tour America. I thought, Phil Collins is on the road again. they've gone over to build bridges with Karl Rove, George Bush's pit bull in glasses, who, you know, writes his incredibly wonderful speeches for him. Presumably on a typewriter with four bleeding keys. It's Haig, who keeps being asked to sign Communard albums while he's over there. And Fox, Liam Fox is going over there. And the really brilliant thing is their itinerary at the end of it, they're going to see the Democrats, just in case.
I think they know the only way that the Tories are going to get power is by asking the American Republican Party to impose a Tory government on Britain.
Which they did 3 years ago, didn't they?
Yeah, that's true, actually. Everything's been taken from the Tories by Labour. They've taken everything now. They've taken their fetishism of private education and capitalism and hospitals, and they've taken everything. And finally, war, which is the Tories' bestest ever thing. Tories just can't bear that Labour's been responsible for more death in 9 years than the Tories could hope to achieve, even if their plans for the health service were put into operation.
Louis Haig, Liam Fox and George Osborne are in Washington trying to heal the rift between the Tories and the Bush administration caused by Michael Howard's criticism of the war in Iraq. The Tory delegation won't be meeting George Bush himself, though initially keen, Bush was disappointed to learn that Dr. Fox wasn't bringing Simon Cowell. Fred, listen to this. Fred, who was tight-lipped about a shot in the arm.
It's one of these stories that, as a comedian, you read it and you think, well, no matter what you think about Dick Cheney, he's obviously going to have a lot of personal anguish over this and a lot of personal heartbreak, and you think, good. He shot his lawyer pal, who snuck up behind him, making a noise like a quail. And, haven't I got tiny little eggs? And he shot him, and he was hospitalised. And then the poor bloke had what doctors called a small heart attack. Presumably he heard that Cheney was coming to visit him. But Cheney has said, after about 3 days, that it was not Harry Whittington's fault. Which I think is just fantastic. It was not Harry, or as we call him, Target. It was not Harry's fault. Dick Cheney's not saying whose fault it was, but it wasn't Harry's.
American Vice President Dick Cheney waited 18 hours before owning up to having shot his friend, 78-year-old Texan lawyer Harry Whittington, on a quail hunting trip. Speaking to reporters, Mr. Whittington said the worst moment wasn't when he was shot by his old friend, it was when Teddy Kennedy offered to drive him to hospital.
Can't say we're not topical.
We'll be doing some hot repeal of the Corn Law stuff in a minute.
I reckon Cheney did it on purpose. Whittington knew too much. Bada bing, bada boom. He's Cheney's lawyer. He's got his stuff he knows. There's no question. Forget about it. He's gone. It's over. If it had been Dan Quayle, you'd have thought understandable and...
The very worst moment for Mr. Whittington came when his old pal, always the good frontiersman, said he insisted on eating what he shot. Alan, who thinks our markets aren't so super?
I think it's these people with small shops.
Yes.
And gradually, as the entire country becomes Tesco, then it will be, London will be the capital of Tesco. The small shops are going out of business, and those very nice places where there's always a cat asleep on the bacon slicer. And the cheese has been there since before my father was born. Madman charging three times as much for a tin that's about to explode because its sell-by date would have frightened the Kaiser. These, for some reason, these places aren't competitive with, and it's really very bad news for all these villains who won't stay open late or give you a decent service or tell you where anything is.
Yes, 2 points. Members of the All-Parliamentary Group for Small Shops have warned that the increasing power of supermarkets could see the end of the corner shop by 2015. Contrary to the group's claims, though, supermarkets do fulfil a vital social role. If they all close down tomorrow, where else would parents go on a Saturday morning to scream at their children? And at the end of round two, everybody has brilliantly got 8 perfect points. Before we start round three, here's a cutting from the Daily Telegraph.
Britain's love affair with a romantic novel appears to be over, with library figures showing that many borrowers are turning to crime.
Thanks to Charlotte Dayson of Worcestershire for sending that in. Jeremy, why is the sound of silence music to grown-ups' ears?
Because there's a machine that's been invented that can make a noise to high-pitched whine that only teenagers can hear. There's also a high-pitched whine that only teenagers can make. But what? Lots of people are complaining about young people standing around outside shops. It's the problem of binge standing. And so the government wants to stagger this so they don't all stand around at the same time. So for one person, it's 8 o'clock on a Saturday night. For another person, it's 3 o'clock on Maundy Thursday. And they'll be at school. In Merthyr Tydfil it originated. And if you're in Merthyr Tydfil, you'd want to stand around outside Merthyr Tydfil. Or indeed run. Very nice. It's like the thing, the dog thing, you know, that the dogs can hear things that we can't hear. Like, go on, drink the water out of the toilet. Go on. Human men can't do it. They'll be jealous. Go on. That pillow fancies you. Go on. But there's a noise that only teenagers can hear, which is...
Teenagers who loiter in large groups will no longer pose a problem. Businessman Harold Stapleton has invented a gadget that produces a high-pitched sound only teenagers can hear. The machine sends out loud, pulsing noises which sound to young people like a demented insect or James Blunt. Phil, listen to this. Sweet 16 by Billy Idols. Phil, why does Sweet 16 leave parents with Sweet Fanny Adams?
People keep doing these surveys about how much kids cost. There was one the other year that said that, you know, from birth till them leaving the house, they cost you about, you know, 100 grand. And as someone with two of the little bastards, you just look at them and it's like seeing money burning. Just a big pile of burning money. Daddy, I love you. Stop burning. Stop breathing, stop eating. Sit naked and quiet in the corner until you graduate and leave. But apparently, yeah, apparently they reckon that 16-year-olds cost you the most, particularly 16-year-old girls with their desire for sparkly lipstick and trendy clothing and the latest hit records of many popular combos, or downloads for their ringtones and morning after pills. So... So, yeah, a 16-year-old costs you thousands and thousands of pounds, and a 15-year-old costs you about 20 years.
Yep. Britain is reading of the shock news that bringing up children is expensive, with a survey claiming the average cost of bringing up a child is just over £43,000, and children cost the most at age 16. The largest unforeseen expense comes at the supermarket checkout, when you have to bribe them to remind you what your chip and PIN number is. Fred, how do morning dog owners leave their bank managers howling?
Well, as listeners might know, I am a dog lover, and I realise I'm going to have to take out some kind of insurance policy or an endowment, because the trend now is to spend a lot of money on their funerals, or you're spending more on them after they've gone than you do on a 16-year-old child. So we're democratic in the Macaulay household, so I took Maisie and Poppy to show them the options. Cremation, burial, or we had a brief and rather unsuccessful trip to the taxidermist, and they not at all happy with that.
For my funeral, I've decided to be scattered. Not cremated, just scattered. I want to be left in carrier bags behind the motorway service station lavatories, all up the A1.
I want to be cremated for about 3 weeks. Just burning and burning and burning, just sitting there until I finish burning. Because I will. It'll be, as a friend of mine once said, it'll be like a pile of tyres. Day 9 of the funeral. They're actually just toasting bread on me. Marshmallows. Everyone's having a bit of a party. They're running a new power source for the whole of Essex off of me. Burning fat people for energy. How ironic. They never move. And the really big freaky ones like you get on Trisha. Man, you could see the CEGB watching Trisha going, oh, we'll have her. And we'll have her. Or we'll have that one.
Phil, you're 20% water, though. You'd be broiled rather than cremated.
As long as the lights stay on in Chelmsford, I'm happy.
A survey by YouGov has found that dog owners are spending more than ever on their deceased pets, with 40% staging a special ceremony. Sadly, not all pet cemeteries are treated with respect. A collie's plot in Carmarthen had to be fenced off after several sheep were found dancing on it. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along.
Simon, I'm indebted to the Cheltenham and Gloucester Building Society, but this clip was sent in... This was sent in by Howard R. Smith of County Durham, and it's come from a product which was made in China. Its instructions. Usage. Replace to meet an emergency the floodlight. 1. At the instancy with darkly of circumstance, will meet an emergency the floodlight switch. 11. To pull out the to open position. Can turn on to meet an emergency the floodlight. 11. To pull out the to close position is then. Burn such as the floodlight is bad. Please press below the way replace, should the position would automatically flick. Open to button up the plank to resolve the versa, our hand of light bulb, to take from replace.
Phil.
This one was sent in by William Hall, and this is from a paper called the Pattaya Mail in Thailand, whose grapevine column reported, a circus dwarf nicknamed Odd died recently when he bounced sideways from a trampoline and was swallowed by a yawning hippopotamus, which was waiting to appear as the next act. Vets called to the scene said, Hilda the hippo had a gag reflex which caused her to swallow. More than 1,000 spectators continued to applaud wildly until they realised the tragic mistake.
Fred.
They're curious that it was vets that they called and not doctors. Shows you where Odd came in this great scheme of things, doesn't it? Urging the public to go nuts for nature is at the heart of a campaign by Gloucestershire Wildlife Trust. Dormice leave a unique tooth mark hole in the hazelnuts they eat, and it's by looking for these nuts that the Trust will be able to find out where this shy and nocturnal mammal is surviving in our countryside. Send your nibbled hazelnuts for identification to the Gloucestershire Wildlife Trust, marked for the attention of the Chief Nutter.
Alan.
Mine's from this Wednesday's Times, Simon, from the World News, page 39, under headline Aircraft Collapses. Oslo. An empty Scandinavian Airlines aircraft was found lying on its fuselage and tail near an Oslo airport gate. An airline spokeswoman said, we don't know what happened to the Fokker.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final score. Alan and Fred have a very good 14 points, but Jeremy and Phil have pipped them to the post with 16. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from the St. Michael the Belfry weekly diary sent in by Philip Smith of York.
Wednesday, November the 30th. Faith in the city. No faith in the city today because of the Archbishop's inauguration. Back to normal next week.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Phil Jupitus, Fred McCauley and Alan Corrin. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by George Cole, Simon Littlefield and Rodri Crooks. And the producer was Katie Tyrrell.
Next week, Simon Hoggart will be joined by Andy Hamilton, Joe Brand, Amanda Iannucci and, of course, Alan Corrin. Now it's time for a look at the weather with Penny Tranter.
Thank you, Alison. Good afternoon. It's going to turn colder next week for all of us as the winds start to come in from the north. We may even see a little of the white stuff too, especially in the east and north, but of course we'll keep you updated. For the rest of the weekend though, temperatures will be typical for mid-February with a good deal of dry weather. So across the Channel Islands and southern England, bright at times this afternoon with a few sunny spells, but fairly cloudy at times too with local mist. And although dry for many, there will be some showers around, especially over the Channel Islands and along the South English coast. A brisk breeze will detract from a high of 7 to 9 degrees. This evening and overnight, cloud will continue to increase with a strengthening wind, keeping the frost mostly at bay, with temperatures around zero, though, in northern parts of southern England, with misty and murky conditions, while temperatures no lower than 5 degrees in the Channel Islands. Now, to East Anglia, the Midlands, northern England, Wales, Northern Ireland, southern and western Scotland. Here it's going to be a dry afternoon with plenty of bright weather and sunny spells, although it will stay misty and murky in parts of East Anglia, the Midlands and eastern Wales, but the dry and bright